Chris.
Juan.
JC.
Holy shit, this is going to be a good one. We meant to do this 2 episodes already. Or I meant to. My intention to by having JC here was to...
You don't know. We can always put this as the first episode.
It doesn't matter. I don't give a fuck. Everybody knows we're banking. No. Let's get to know JC. Let's get to know the Honduran kid with a dream.
Let's go.
Let's go on this wild trip.
Right? All right. So you're born in Honduras.
Yeah.
How long did you stay there?
I was there till eight years old. Almost 9 years old.
And how did you, like, what was the decision? What was the factor? Who was the person that said, hey, we're going to fucking Miami?
Oh, my dad. My dad and my mom moved here prior. And then when I was 9, they brought me and my sisters, to live to Miami, Florida. Sunny place. Sunny Miami, Florida.
Sunny place, shitty people.
So nine years old, you're only, so you come over here and you learn English.
Learn English. Have a hard time saying refrigerator for a long time, you know.
I had the same problem with three and treat.
My daughter has that problem right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Emily or Olivia?
Emily.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, she has a problem saying three and free.
Oh.
So I kind of tease her and I tell her like, oh, these three trees are free.
Yeah,
it's like the three-letter sound. It's three.
Didn't I always call it three, though?
Yeah. So your teacher has it practicing that.
So you showed up. You showed up here at a decent age where you had already. I mean, you remember being young in Honduras, right?
Yeah.
And then you come here. Is it a culture shock? Is it like?
Yeah, it was definitely a culture shock. You know, most of my values were very. They were innocent. Important values, poor values, like ideas that kind of really meant something, being proper and educated and kind of not being disrespectful meant a lot, you know. Like in my childhood, my grandmother was very like, you'll learn it, you know, like you're gonna fucking learn it, you know? Like, that shit's gonna get through to you. You know, it was very, it was an adult-driven world. Like, you had your opinions, but your opinions were still as a child, and they were kind of, it was understood to you that you're a child, and what you do in an adult world, adults guided, and there wasn't a lot of whys or how come. And it was kind of like, do this because. And if there was a why, you know. On a good day, you go because this and this. On a bad day, it was like, do it because I'm telling you to do it. Because I'm your adult and I'm responsible for you. You know? At the time, it sucked. At the time, it sucked. As a child, it sucked. As an adult now, with kids of my own, it's great. A lot of the values that were initially driven into me and drilled into me, they make me who I am, and I'm almost proud of them, you know? Real proud of them, actually. So.
Oh, sure. Well, that's good. That's good. And when do you pick up art? When do you pick up, like, that need to express yourself? Or what was the first thing that was like, this is something that...
Well, my earliest memories were always with art. Were always initially with drawing, you know? Like, drawing. Like, I have clear memories of my older sisters dropping me off my first day of school, first grade, you know, and within that school,
and this is in Honduras,
yeah.
Oh shit!
And within that school, I have real early memories of the art classes, and thinking like, wow, you know, like this shit was like something different, something better, like something good. Like at that point, it was really just about like being able to copy something, copy what you see, whether it was another drawing and all that. And I have like really good memories of wanting to kind of beat everyone at copying that better, you know, like being able to illustrate that better, and like being real pissed off, like my older sister, of her at that point being able to draw better than me, and me being kind of mad about that, you know, like kind of mad about the fact that it's like I don't want to get better at that. And then when I came here to the U.S., with the language barrier and all that, seeing other kids that drew and all that kind of helped helped with the idea that it's like, hey, I could draw too, you know? Look at this. And let me see your drawings. It kind of, it was fun.
And when do you, like, start looking at it as more than just, like, drawings that you do for yourself? At what point, like, when do you start noticing, like, this is kind of like a passion. I'm not going to stop doing this. I could do something big with this.
Yeah. Well, ironically enough, when I came, I was, like, fourth grade level. Mm-hmm. Came here fourth grade. Throughout those years, I always picked an art as an elective. And ironically enough, I never got art throughout middle school, throughout high school, my first year of high school. My 11th grade year, I moved to another city. I moved to Hialeah. My dad owned a business at that point in Hialeah. I go to a new high school against my will, sort of. Like, I didn't want to graduate from that high school. I wanted to graduate from Miami High. Mm. And then in 11th grade, we're doing some, like, graffiti stuff. Bullshit, you know, like real simple graffiti markers on the wall, like real basic, real dumb shit. And then my 11th grade teacher, Miss Marfisi, I'll never forget, like, she kind of changed it all around for me. And I was looking at a 12-ounce Prophet magazine. And in that, there was a mural that some graffiti artist had done of Van Gogh's bedroom. And I'm kind of looking through it and had my little notebook with little tags and shit. And then she came around and she was like, oh, you know, that graffiti artist knows what he's doing. And then I was like, oh, what do you mean? And she was like, yeah, you know, like, look at, you know, that's Van Gogh's bedroom. And I was like, oh, you know, like, these guys are like street artists, you know, like unruly, you know, like, what the fuck you mean, you know? And then we went to a history book and she showed me the exact same picture.
Fuck.
And it was like, holy shit. And then she's, you know, like, she kind of told me, like, you know, like, what do you think? Like, what do you think? Like, all these images come from somewhere and, like, it's all relative. And then from there, it kind of just, it sparked, it was like the right spark to kind of say, pay attention and look and learn. She helped me out throughout all high school. And by my senior year, it was like, I want to do this. I want to pursue it. And I kind of want to take a look at it and learn more about it. I used to sit and read all her notes and all that.
Read what?
Her notes.
Oh, her notes. Okay.
And she enjoyed it. She was a good teacher. Yeah, we kind of just took it from there. Went to New World after.
What's New World?
Art school in Miami.
Okay, so after high school, you're like, this is it, and you just kind of continue it.
Yeah.
Do you have a backup though? Like, is there something else you're doing at the same time, or something else you're thinking about?
Like random jobs, half-time jobs. Nothing major. Nothing, no career-wise. I went to New World. New World was, it was fun. It was a tough time for me personally because, I don't know, I was 18, 19, had my first car. It was real bullshitting. I was real dealing with the fact that I was like a half adult. I wasn't quite a kid yet, and I wasn't an adult yet. So I had this freedom. I didn't really know what to do with it, and just bullshitting. And I had a half-assed job, and I was half-assing school, so there were some guys that ran a gallery at that point during New World, and I like the idea of that. So between school and that, I told my old man that I didn't want to do school no more. After like 2 years, I told him I didn't want to do school no more. I kind of wanted to do something bigger and better and kind of take the world up, you know, kind of swallow the world whole. I just dropped out and started working full time to make some money. The idea was to open up a gallery. I did that within like 2 or 3 years after dropping out. Kind of ran with that. I started making work, showing work. And then today, I'm, you know, still making work, showing work with a gallery in Wynwood, and doing other things. You know?
And, like, what's the... it's a weird question, but what's like the ultimate goal? Like, what's not, you know, not a year, not 5 years, but like 10, 15 years? Like, where do you hope it will lead you to?
The ultimate goal is to do it full time and to do it for a living. You know, that includes making work and selling work. Part of the fact of owning a gallery was, I didn't want to just deal with a gallery as an artist. Like, I didn't want to be at the mercy of, like, just being an artist. So I kind of wanted to sell work at the same time. I still see myself doing that in the long run. I currently want to pursue owning a gallery in my 40s. Like, I want to do my 30s, and I kind of want to get everything out of my system and kind of go at it again, owning a gallery and showing work, which are separate artists, in my 40s. And ultimately, it'll be painting for a living, making work for a living, selling work, mine and other artists, and being involved in every aspect in the art world that I could get my hands on. You know, like, I don't just want to be a painter, I don't just want to be a dealer, gallerist, curator. Like, I want to take it all in, you know, like, all in, the whole aspect of it. I enjoy the whole idea of it. I enjoy the whole market of it, the whole hanging of a show. Enjoy behind the scenes packaging, unpackaging work. I enjoy the idea of, like, you could be doing anything else in the world and you're handling a painting right now. And if my bills are paid for on a daily basis by me just handling work, then I'll be extremely happy.
That's, you know, it's funny you say that, because, like, I would, you know, like, I would think, you know, like, your part is you paint and you turn in the paintings. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of like, you know what? All right, let's just see what happens. Like, but for you to say, no, I want to put them up, I want to see, like, the whole fucking... I guess you don't really hear about that, you know? Like, you hear
but
about...
But it is involvement. I mean, there is a lot of involvement.
Like, but, I mean, I remember seeing, you know, certain pieces that you have to do them in a certain way. You know, you have to have, like, the chimney in order for the paintings to look right above it, you know? But, I mean, can you just give your paintings up into a gallery and just let them put them up how they feel like?
Yeah.
Or do you need, like, because of how you're speaking, like, do you need to kind of be... need to have a hand in how they put them up?
It all depends on the gallery. It all depends on the curator. Like, if I seen prior shows that I think are, they take a pride in hanging and in lighting work, then yeah, it's like, you know, taking the work, edit it down, show what you want to show. Mm-hmm. If I think that they're not up there in terms of, like, they don't care about it enough, then I either won't work with them or I'll have a hard time giving them work. Mm-hmm. You know, it's no different with showing work. I just think that a lot of people show work in a poor way. Like, they don't take pride in the way it's hung and the way it's displayed and how the people are gonna show it. And
yeah,
you gotta care for it, you know.
Right.
You gotta, like, really.
Yeah, because that's. I think the same thing could be drawn, like, a band playing on stage, and the sound is shitty. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can play awesome, and maybe the people know your songs, and it doesn't matter. But if the sound sucks, like, you're doing a disservice. You know. And so, by the same token, there might be bands that say, "Oh, I don't give a fuck. Just, you know, as long as we're loud." And other people would be like, "No. I need more bass. I need vocals up. Hey, I need this down. Hey, the drums are, you know, sounding right." You know, I mean, it's care, you know, because in the end, it's how you're going to show your work. You can't fucking, you can't shit on that. You can't, I mean, we've done, I think, I've done those shows, and you've done it too, like, Joe show somebody as a favor, or somebody asks us, all right, let's not be a dick, let's, you know, I'll show some more, and yeah, you know, they'll put you in a fucking weird corner, or they don't put a fucking light on your shit, or it's like, you know, where everybody's fucking leaning against the wall and they're leaning on your fucking paint. You know, stupid, mm-hmm. annoying shit like that. And you're just like, okay, well, last time I do this, you know? And other times you can be in a place where it's like, oh, the lighting's perfect. They put the piece nice and fucking clean. Oh, wow, they hung it really in a good place. It makes sense somehow, you know, even if it's a group show. Like, oh, they're going to put your painting next to this sculpture because maybe the color that you're using and everything. Because even in a gallery that says represents you, they're going to ask you. You know, they're going to come in, you're going to come in and you're going to put your stuff up and they're going to be like, what do you think? Is this good? Or you might say, you know what, like, I don't like it because really this is the last piece of the series, or I don't feel these two paintings should be together, you know, because there's a narration you're making, you know. So, I mean, it's the ifs and buts.
I just feel like everything, I guess, you know, at 29, as much as I've picked up throughout my life, like, I just feel like there's certain people that care about certain things. Let's say a chef, you know, for lack of a better example, like a chef that is good at what he does, that takes pride in what he does, like, he or she might get pissed off by overcooking his chicken in his kitchen, you know, because he just knows, like, fuck, you know, like, it could have been a minute less, or it could have been 30 seconds less. And, like, this is what I do, you know? And then I have to eat it. And I overcooked it. And it's still edible, and it'll still feed you. But that idea of, like, buying, in terms of a chef, or buying the right tomato, or, like, cooking the chicken the way it should be, or any piece of meat, or making the omelet the way it should be, he just takes pride on that. Like, you can't turn that off. You know, it's just, that's what you do. You love that. You love the idea of that. And, like, me walking into another gallery, or me working with the gallery I work with, like, I take pride in that shit. You know, like, I walk into another gallery, and as much as I'm seeing the work, I'm seeing, like, the way it's hung, the way it's curated, what the placement of the work is. What is the dealer doing? You know, what are the people working there doing? Like, are they greeting people? Are they talking to people? Do they care? They have this chance of showing work, of doing great things. You know what I'm saying? Like, do you give a fuck about that? Like, do you take pride in that? You know what I mean? Like, when people walk out of here, buy or buying something or not buying something, like, are they gonna walk out of here and know that you gave them the best show that you could give them? Physically and financially and everything. Like, when they leave your space, like, do they have the means to say, like, that show sucked because it was hung the wrong way, because it was too much artwork, because it wasn't curated, because the lights were off, because it just looked like shit, you know?
You know, it's really interesting you say that, because somebody asked me a question, like, if you wrote a script and it turned into shit as a movie, like, how do you feel about that? And you know, it's the opposite of what you guys think. I'm all like, if somebody buys my script, they fucking own it. They can do whatever the fuck they want with it. If it turns out to be a shit movie, I wipe my hands off of it when I fucking sold it to somebody.
Legally.
You know? Yeah. You know? Yeah, oh yeah, I might be.
I know, and you know what? That nightmare still, you know, but can happen for a painter. Service. Because they can buy your painting and hang it horribly in their house. And, you know, you might have said, you know, oh, they bought it because they liked it, but maybe they bought it because it matched their couch. You know what I'm saying? And that's the truth. You know, and after that, you don't have ownership of the context that it's going to be shown.
No, but I say, but, like, in your case, it's different because you can still kind of, like, you give it to a curator, you have it into a gallery, and you can have a little bit of say just to make sure it looks just the right way, you know? Mm-hmm. You have that ability that the final product might still look like something it did in your head, you know, as opposed to other people where, like, for example, for a writer, you might not have the final say once you fucking sell whatever it is you got, you know, whatever they do with it afterwards, or a photographer, they turn their photograph into a fucking Hallmark picture, a Hallmark card, you know, I'm not saying there's nothing, you know, there's, it's cheapening your product, but what if you never meant for your picture to be a Hallmark card, you know, at least it seems like you guys kind of have a little bit of say in the final word, you know, how it ends up in somebody's living room, but at least how the last look that anybody gives to it you guys have a little bit of say. Like, it's going to be lit.
And, right. in the end, you have some say even as a writer, because you can always turn around and say, well, however they handle this is shit. You know what I mean?
At least,
look at Alan Moore. Alan Moore hates every fucking movie they ever did anything of his.
But I'm saying, though, but somebody, you know, but, like, he had nothing to do with how it was made. He can talk shit because
of that. Same thing with the script, though.
No, that's what I'm saying, though, but it goes back to, like, writers. But as you, I mean, I'm getting the impression as painters, though, or you know, as the type of art that you guys do, you can almost have 99% say in how it looks right before it goes into someone's home.
Well,
which is kind of cool.
I think there's a certain detachment there. I get what you're saying, but there's a certain detachment there. Someone can make a movie about an artist, and it could be poorly made. Right?
Right,
and they just bought the rights to make that movie. It could be the same idea. Like, they made a shitty movie on that artist. Now, you as a writer, I would think your gallery or your direct contact there is your publisher, right?
Right.
You have, and you will work with that publisher depending on what they do to your work, and it won't get published until you say so. You know?
Yes.
So, like, your gallery, let's say your gallery, like, I can give them a painting. And then at any minute, you could tell them, like, no, you know, I don't like it, whatever the fuck. Whether it's good business or bad business, you ultimately say, I work with you, I don't work with you. And for a writer and a publisher, it's the same thing, you know? Like, you could tell them, like, they're going to edit you down. And they're going to do shit because that's their business. They're in the nature of publishing shit. Mm. The gallery's in the nature of showing and selling things. Are you going to see eye to eye always? No, because you're in the nature of creating and they're in the nature of making money. Mm-hmm. You know? And, like, what's good for creating sometimes isn't good for making money. And they don't give a fuck. They do give a fuck because they need to, but ultimately they don't care because you know why? They don't have the luxury of caring about these things, these minute things, because they need to sell to keep their lights on. The publisher needs to sell to keep their shits getting printed. Now, we work with maybe that one gallery and the other gallery. They might have 100 people they work with, 10, 15 people they work with. You still have that right to say, look, whether it's good business or bad business right now, like, what you're doing with my work, I don't like, and I have the right to tell you, no, fuck it, you know, maybe at a later date, or maybe tomorrow, maybe we fix this, it'll be better. Do artists and writers sometimes get in a spot where it hurts to say that because the bills are piling up and you're doing all that shit? Yes. 100%. But it gets to a point where it's like, if someone's going to print your shit the wrong way, and this is what you care about, then you rather be hurting than to print it out the wrong way.
No, but I'm telling you, I think as in the way you've explained it, as a painter, I think you have a little more say than, for example, a writer. Because
we're talking about what type of writer. Because even in a script writing situation,
I mean, you sell
script
it?
Writing. If you're a commercial script writer, you're working for a studio. You're a fucking typewriting.
No, but I'm saying, what if like, you know, it's for example me. I wrote a couple scripts. Somebody wants to give me money for them. I think they're worth the money they're paying me. Mm-hmm. Yet, they come in, they hire a second scriptwriter to go over and make some changes. I have no control at all whatsoever. My original idea just got fucked.
That's in a commercial venture. That's more, you know, in a commercial venture.
But I'm saying, but you really have no control. Yeah. Once you sell it, it's done, you know? Like, and it's different, though, because once you sell it, it goes into someone's home or someone's collection, and they really can't do anything bad to it. You know, they could just hide it for 10 years. But for me, I have to see it turn into a romantic comedy. I have to see it turn into a piece of shit. I have to see it being acted by the worst actors in the world.
But that's in a commercial venture, I would say.
But I mean, no.
If you were writing a novel.
That's different. That's different.
Whole other thing.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It makes sense.
And even, you know, and again, a publisher acting as a gallery, you might have an editor. I was just reading a thing on Maya Angelou. And how, like, they're talking about routines, writer routines or something, the article. And how she would get up in the morning, write a couple of pages, blah, blah, blah. Maybe by dinner, she prepares a dinner for friends or for herself. She'll read over what she wrote. Maybe it might be 8 pages, 10 pages. She tries to do 10 pages.
Yeah.
And, you know, then hand it to the fucking editor. And she's had, you know, she says, you know, the editor say, you know, you shouldn't say this. You shouldn't say aren't, you should say are not. And because of that, like, her storm out of the fucking room, say horrible shit, send the fucking editor to hell, and, you know, fuck everybody and walk away. 2 days later, call back and be like, all right, so why do you think that? You know, and she's had the same editor for like 29 years. Yeah. You know, and it's like, it's, you know, it's hard. It's because it is a secondary opinion. And I that is like art to me always constantly has is it takes two to tango. You can write for yourself, and that's the first and foremost person you're writing for. But it takes other people to fucking come in, and sometimes they'll say, hey man, you know, I never saw it this way, or I never saw it that way, you know? I mean, it's in different versions in different ways. Yeah. And a gallery can do that too. You might be picked up by a gallery. You may want to be in with a gallery that says, you know, it's predominantly painters, you know? You don't want to be in a gallery that's photographers or sculptors or even a type of art. You know, oh, these are chromatic expressionists, you know, and you feel like you're better as a fucking realist or something or whatever the fuck, you know? There's a lot of shit like that, you know, considering what they're going to do. Yeah, so there's a lot of factors.
And let me ask you something then, like, since you're both in it now. What's the best part about being able to express yourself? Not just the fact that you can express yourself, but what, like, is the best part of what you do? Like, is it seeing it hung up? Is it seeing it being carried off to someone's home? Or is it just accomplishing the feat itself of being able to see your vision in on a canvas? Like, what is, like, what's the kick? You know, what's, you know, what's the high of what you do?
Personally,
what's the point of what you're doing?
What's the point of this miserable existence?
You know,
on a personal note, obviously, yeah, exactly. Getting a kick out of doing it is great. There they go. When you see the work in a gallery, what it took for that painting to be hung in front of you, it's completely different than what you take from it as the viewer. You know, like it took a lot of long nights. It took a lot of, let's say, drunk nights. It took a lot of fights. It took a lot of random shit that goes with it that is attached to that painting, because that painting is attached to a specific time in your life as the artist. So when you see that painting, you see that time frame. You know, like as a writer, like I wrote this on this date, and you know what you were going through life at that time, and it's never gonna change because it always kicks back memories of that. So that's great. The best thing for me is being able to see other people that do the same shit and kind of reading through these paintings in that same way that I see my paintings as like what did it take that person to make that painting or that sculpture and all that shit, you know? Like, the sculpture is the end result, but like during that time, like, what were you doing? You know, like, what the fuck, like, what did it take? You know what I'm saying? Like, did you like that or did you not like this? Like, did this give you a hard time? Did this not give you a hard time? And the gallery floor is up for sale. Is the final product. The work never gets made to be sold. You know, the gallery chooses what is going to be sold.
Really? So you can send, 15 paintings and they might not be all put up?
No. Why would they? Mm-hmm. If you own a gallery, yeah,
they don't need to accept your shit. No, by the same token, they might say, hey, you're a painter and you decide to do collage, let's say. They might be like, hey, I don't fucking want collage from you. I want fucking paintings. You know? And this is what sells. Again, they're like representing you. You know? Yeah. And like JC says, they're not gonna make money. They're not. You know, if they didn't work into your work, they wouldn't be talking to you in the first place.
Right.
Yeah. So there is some way. And they might sit there and say, well, why are you going this direction? You know? But in the end, they're going to be like, hey, man, you know, this is what we fucking need. This is what we want. You know? And there's, you know, they'll literally tell you, hey, dude, do another year of this. Plow out X amount. Whatever you want to do. And then afterwards, then do whatever the fuck you want. And then give me time to sell this.
Yeah.
Literally.
Jesus Christ.
Barely. Hey, I mean,
I figured, like, you have 15 go up on walls. Boom.
Maybe if you're another top-end artist.
All right.
Maybe if you're at the end of, like, a David Cho or something like that.
Even then.
And even then, I mean, they might say, like, you know.
Like, even then, you had to think that the the gallery owner and the curator is going to do their job and edit down your work. Because that's their job. They need to edit down your work. Otherwise, you know what? Let's show everything I produced in the last year. You know what I mean? There might be a bunch of shit there that isn't...
That isn't going to ever see light day.
Why would you show it?
Damn.
Does it make you feel better? All right. Let's say a movie, right? Like, shoot every scene you ever shot. Some scenes are better than others. And you need to edit it down for whatever reason. Your movie needs to be 2 hours long. Some scenes get added, some scenes get subtracted. As the director or the producer, like, your job is to put out the best product out there.
No, and in that situation, there are directors that have their editors. Well, Quentin Tarantino, when his editor died suddenly because he fell off a cliff, he was devastated. And he really felt like he was in trouble. Because that was somebody who had the eye. You should have shot the scene, and like, we might have a 2-camera, 3-camera scene.
Yeah.
You have all these fucking angles, and the editor will be the one that like might clip. You might have so much faith in them, be like, "Let's do this scene. What do you think? Boom, boom, boom. This do right camera. This scene. Bam, bam, bam. Here's the scene. This is how I think it should be.
Show it
fucking way. A. This looks awesome. Yeah. You might have a sound design. This guy's gonna do the soundtrack. The guy might say, you know what? You fired a fucking Uzi, and it sounds okay, but it seems a little shitty and repetitive. I have an AR-15 fucking sound clip. And it sounds so much more booming in this fucking scene if you want to do it this way. Mm. You know, I mean, there's a lot to it. There's always ways of bettering yourself. In art, I think what it is that there tends to be the most of a singular vision. Just like in writing. You know, I think there's the best chance for a singular vision that you're going to deal with. And that's amazing because then you're only dealing with one person as far as the art. But when you look at anything else, there are many hands that might be in that.
Damn.
You know?
I think the best idea wins.
Even like, if it's against your own idea when it comes to your art?
Or the best right idea wins. You know? Because that's a little vague. Like, the best idea wins are vague and shit, you know? Cause I
no, but I mean, five people here, one person.
It's hard because that's the thing. That's where it all depends on the situation. I think it's a meditative situation.
You gotta have a trust in the person.
Yeah, and that's like when there's people that, you know, hey man, there's, you know, and this is just like any other business. There's artists out there and the galleries headhunt. And there's galleries that might come in and say, hey, you know, I can represent you better. Or I can let you do the things that you want to do. Come with me, you know? And there's some people that say, fuck no. I'm staying where I am because they get my work. And if you have a good, just like a writer might have with an editor or anything else, if you have a good repertoire with those people, a good rapport, it's totally worth it. Because now they know your shit. And they might be, a gallery might be sitting with JC and be like, hey man, stop bullshitting yourself with this work. Like, you're doing stuff that I know you've already done. You're just doing this for whatever. What's up? What's going on? Or why are you going this direction? Is this serious? Or this is awesome. We need more. What do we need to do to get there? You know. Yeah. And that's where, you know, there's that middle ground. And that's hard. That's hard to get to. That's super hard. That's once in a lifetime kind of thing.
The gallery has a vision too. You know, each gallery has a vision as to how they want to run their business, how they want to do their shows. And that needs to be on par with what you want to do. It's no different as the public, right? Like, as the public, you want to go eat somewhere, right? You got to have an idea of what you want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you're a vegetarian, you want to eat that. If you want to eat a good steak, if you want to eat seafood, you kind of know who is selling what. But a gallery is no different. There's galleries that deal majorly in painting. There's other galleries that deal a lot in contemporary work. There's other galleries that deal with, you know, in sculptures, let's say. There's other galleries that deal with, like, mostly figurative. There's a lot of galleries that deal with installation work. And you kind of have to know, what do you want to see? It doesn't mean you can't see all of them. It just means, like, what are you in the mood to see? What do you want to see? What are you in the mood to buy? You kind of know what gallery is doing what. Now, when the gallery opens up, it has to know where it's, like, what is your market? What do you want to do? What do you want to say? as a curator, as a gallery. Based on that, you pick up your artist. Now, you already picked up your artist when you do your shows. Then there's a clear vision on how do you want to show them? What do you want to do with them? How do you want to show them? How do you want to build them? Because ultimately, you're building them, right? Because you're building them because it's to your benefit that they get bigger. Because if they get bigger, you get bigger, right? Artists deal with you. That's your artist. You're representing them. Let's do everything it takes to make them be successful, to have them be successful. You're already working with them, so you already believe in the work. And you kind of just grow them. Grow your artists. See what they're doing.
I think for a gallery, it's the same like as a collector sometimes, too. Because you're going to say, well, it's the long run. What's the long game? Like, do you give a fuck about the journey that they're going to take? You know? Like, okay, I want to see JC in 10 years. So I want to be there for that. And that's the thing. That's the heavy-duty side of that.
You know, it's funny. I had the whole complete opposite, like, aspect of it. I figured you had, you know, like, you hooked up with a gallery. And basically, like, hey, you know, you have 20 paintings and they're going to go up. And I mean that, like, in my head, I'm like, that's how it's.
No, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, the magic this of is it, the reason though. Why, like, bands.
I didn't know there was so much behind it. I thought it was just like.
But this is the same way that bands have B-sides, you know? Because what happens is what? What's the stuff they didn't get on the album? A lot of times, it's not that the band didn't put it on the album; it's because the producer says, you know what, dude? You know, you're going with this theme. You're going with this idea for this album. This song doesn't fit. It's a good song. We'll put it out as a single. We'll put it out as this or a B-sides. You know, before in the old school way of recording, your single was your leader,
right?
So that was going to represent the whole album and the power of the album. And your B-sides were good shit, but didn't represent the album. You know, and that's gonna, you know, you had bands that had great B-sides and shitty main albums, and the opposite. So I mean, it's the same thing, you know. But in the long run, it's one of those things you say, you know, it's the same as a record company going and saying, I want a 3-album deal. Because I want to see 3 albums. Like, I think 3 albums are going to be
And they're saying, like, the first one sounds good, you guys are going to get better, and the third one's going to be great. So we can at least invest in those 3 because we know you guys are going to push out 3 good albums.
Yeah.
Kind of like you're saying, the curators and the galleries are kind of, like, following artists and, like, this guy's going to be worth something in 10 years.
We're going to do the... We'll make the investment. We'll make the investment.
It's worth the gamble.
Right.
Like, he's doing work that I enjoy. He or she's doing work that I enjoy. That I think is in the right direction. It's like the circus. Everybody loves the circus. Everybody loves the spectacle of the circus. The glamorous. You know, like, everybody wants to see somebody walking a tightrope and see all that shit, right? At any minute, something could go wrong. Everyone wants there as much for that as for a show. When the doors close and the lights go off, there's so much work behind it that the people that run off with the circus have to, by nature, enjoy that amount of work. Because the public sees the glamorous. The public sees the exhibition. The public sees, you know, a picture here, a picture, an Instagram picture here, a Facebook here, the great paintings. But behind that, there's a ton of shit, you know what I'm saying? There's
like the following gallery any artist, work, I think. You know? I think it's following any artist. When I look at, like, again, like David Cho or Ashley Wood or Ken Williams or any of these painters that I really like, you know, Ken Williams, I can track his work back all the way to 87 when I was first exposed to it. And tracking his work and seeing what he's doing now, it's like, oh, fuck. Like, wow, he's really reaching these other levels. He's doing these things that he didn't do before. So, you know... And same thing with a musician. You go and say, oh, you know, that first album was pretty good. Second album was right. Third album, I didn't even fucking like that third album. Oh, but the fourth album, they fucking came back. You know, that's the thing. And I think it's the same thing with a painter or any artist. You know, after a while, you say, all right, where are you fucking taking me? Where are we going to go? And there's people that go off the rails. You know, they go into things that you may not like. You know, very few times is that successful. Very few times are there artists that say, oh, you know, the painter, now I'm a performance artist, and people say, oh, okay, I'm gonna stay on this fucking ride. No, they're like, this is shit, I don't want to do it.
You know, and
there's some artists that do great.
And speaking of that, we're coming close to the end of our time here. Now, and I want to dedicate some time to this, that creative process. When do you go and say, I've got a, or how it, how does it happen? Like, I've got a painting in mind, or I'm going to start doing this, or do you just go in front of a canvas and start just?
I think the, for a long time, like, you kind of go and find that. The best way to sum that up to this date that I've read or that I believe in is a Chuck Close quote that he goes, the inspiration is for amateurs. The rest of us just show up and get to work. You know? And it's just...
Nice.
It's just actively... And Juan is fucking... deals with that. And I was telling you the other day about that try harder, work harder.
Yeah.
That it was so simple and it's so... It's all to the point. Like,
just some background for people that are listening. We, you know, I helped JC at the gallery, and we shared a studio space for a long time. And it was one of those things that it was funny because it's like we saw the same struggles. We had the same kind of things, and we went through all the same loops and everything, and working with them and everything. And yeah, and it's very much like that. No, you can't, you know, you can't meditate on it too much. After a while, it's like, go fucking do it. And see what happens. And that's happened to me. I had paintings that were totally planned out. I had 30 million sketches and did this. I fucking did it. And yeah, whatever. But the one that I was fucking with or fucking around with, or just, that one's the one that fucking...
No, no, because it's great that you say that, because one of the things that I follow is one of my favorite writers, Bukowski. And he had this fucking thing where every night this fucker would try to write 8 to 10 poems. Whether they were good, they were bad. He needed to put in the fucking work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was his fucking thing. And I do it once a week, where I will sit down, and no matter how long it takes, whether it takes an hour or fucking 10, I am writing until I hit the 10 poem mark, you know? And that was his thing. And like you said, he didn't wait for inspiration. He knew he needed to do this. This is work. So he went in, and if he wrote, you know, 10, 8, whatever things didn't work out, he did his day. He did his day's work. And the next day he did it again. The next day he did it again. And I mean, to me, that's why he's fucking prolific. Except I didn't know that while reading him. I knew that about him later on. And it, like you said, like people who wait for fucking inspiration are probably never going to get it. The fuckers will just go and do what they need to do. That's awesome.
That's the way it is, man. There's another artist. I don't know who said it exactly, but it might have been Chuck Close again. He said something like your job is like just show up. Like in terms of the studio, like just show up. If you show up, you have nothing to do. If you have nothing to paint, then sweep your floors. And then by nature, like by the nature of you being in your studio, like you'll start sweeping your floors, and eventually you'll start mixing colors, and eventually you'll start painting.
And that's fucking great.
It's an incubation process. It's just one of the things that when you're there, there's nothing else you can do. It's like if you're stuck in your car. Like, say you're waiting for somebody, and you're just sitting there, and you haven't parked, and you're waiting. You know what you're going to do after a while? Look around and be like, man, I got a lot of garbage here.
And you start picking it up.
And then you're like looking at the interior like, fuck, I should clean this shit. And it's just been one of those things. And a lot of times, if you just make yourself sit in front of a blank screen or a blank piece of paper or a blank canvas or just sit there with the instrument in your hand, something is going to happen. But to go and wait for, like, the fucking moon to align with the Mars and the sun and this. And, I mean, it's good to have it. There's days that are going to come and it's going to be awesome. The fucking, you know, you're going to have the sages whispering in your ear and it's all fucking gold coming out of your fingers and it's all awesome. That's true, but don't wait for that, you know? The other days, you're going to have to call the spirits. You're going to have to fucking be able to find that out.
Yeah. Hardest working motherfucker I know.
I agree. This fucker is in everything.
A lot of it.
The secret, kids, a is lot crack.
Of it. And a lot of it, I think prior to me taking knowledge of this idea of just do and do and do, I think before even acknowledging that shit, like you were already preaching that.
Yeah.
You know. And like I recall conversations that we had back then, where it was just like, oh, I want to see more of it, and I want to see this, and like at the time, it kind of just went like as a, like I kind of took it as a compliment, you know, And then now I kind of realized that it was more as a, like as a, come on, you know, like do more, nigga. Like it's dope. Like this is good. And it doesn't take it away from doing good, but just do more. Like more makes it better. Like you do this, you stay at good. You know what I'm saying? You do more of it, and you get better, and then you do more of it, and then you reach great shit. You know? And I believe that. Like I've seen him work, and I've seen his shit, and I've seen the amount of work he puts in, and I understand the amount of work that it takes to produce that much. And fuck, I see it and I'm fucking psyched by it. And I'm like inspired by that shit, you know.
And all the people that you know give me a fucking hard on is the same way. Just fucking go. Just do it. Go. There's no reason not to. And fuck your tired, fuck your back, fuck TV, fuck, you know, all the shit that's all you're doing is taking away from your life a real life to live, you know. All you're doing is confusing yourself with things that are just gonna waste your time. This is the real stuff, and if you can get the real stuff done, you're gonna be that much more happier. And distractions, those are just distractions. Those are things that distract you till you die. It's like, oh, I'm gonna watch this movie, so like, you know, the next 2 hours that I'm gonna lose when I die, I'm just, you know, I have something to watch. But instead, do something, make it, and your work's gonna surpass you. Your work's gonna survive those things, and those are little parts of you. That's the closest a man can get to giving birth.
Jesus,
I think the work really shows it too. I think the work shows it too.
Yeah,
like I don't know, as a painter, like you kind of walk into in front of some painting sometimes, and like, whether you like it or not, you respect it because you understand the amount of work
I
it
totally
took
understand to what get there. And maybe in writing, it's the same way and everything. Because it's one of those things, like, again, you can say, I don't dig this. This is not my bag. This is not my thing. Not even close. But I know that this person is coming from a real place.
Yeah.
This person is coming from the same place I'm coming from. And because of that, you can say, oh, this is cool. You know?
You respect it. Cause like I know what it takes to do that. Like I could physically imagine the amount of time that it took to do that. And not that if you spend a lot of time in there, it makes it better or makes it worse, but you can respect that. You know what I mean? Like one thing is saying that you want to run, and another thing is saying like I just came back from a 5 mile run. There's just two different things. You know what I'm saying? Somebody already put in the time, and the other person is thinking, I want to get into running. You know what I'm saying? The person that already did the 5 mile run could tell you exactly what the fuck it felt like in 1, 2, 3, and what it felt like in the 5th mile. You know? The person thinking about it, well, you haven't done shit. All you have is a good idea.
Yeah.
You know?
And where can people look you up, man?
ChirinoSanchez.com. And BlackSquareGallery.com.
And you have a Twitter handle too?
And I have a Twitter at Chirino Sanchez.
By the way, you know what I love? His name is so unique. It doesn't have to be underscore. It doesn't have to be the real.
Yeah, well, there's like one kid out there. He's like, I'm going to get a Twitter. Taken. What the? Hey, I lost one of Arl to a kid.
I just
in Miami.
Got it. Well, I just got it. I didn't have it. Yeah. I didn't have it. I had
at CS you had
Gallery.
At CS Gallery, right?
Somebody else had it, and I just got it like 6 months ago, and I was really psyched about it. And then
I'll hold on to that shit.
And I kind of feel like I have to do it justice now. I'm working on getting a studio in 2013 to do more work.
Right down, right at the end of the street, they got all those little lofts and studios, and they're like.
Yeah.
$1 million.
No, they're
no,
actually, like,
I'm a, I,
they're not expensive
to,
from what I hear.
I have to get it. I honestly,
you need a fucking space.
I need a space. I need to work more. I need to do more, just to do more, and to kind of, I kind of do it all, and like with this whole mentality of owning a business and not owning a business, and knowing what the fuck you want to do and not knowing what you want to do. Just have to, man. For the work deserves it. For me to do more of it, and for me to concentrate on it and actually pursue it as much as I do for my 9 to 5. You know?
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. Thanks for sitting down with us again. and thank you for everyone for listening for 50 fucking minutes.
Later.
Find Juan's drawings and musings at fawakata.com. That's FWACATA. Keep up with Chris drinking and rambling at typewriteronmute.blogspot.com. Also like them on Facebook at Zombie Years and Christian Gillen. That's GUILLEN.